It is Monday, February the 13th. This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us. Coming up, a call for a UN Security Council special meeting over North Korea's missile test.
I would expect there to be a statement from the council condemning the test. I think it's unlikely that we see additional sanctions. Sanctions on North Korean missile tests tend to be related to things like their space launch, which are much more robust rockets than this.
Also ahead, we examine a new nominee for the U.S. High Court, hundreds arrested in U.S. immigration raids, what's trending on social media, and the passing of a renowned singer. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. North Korea said today it had successfully test-fired a new type of medium to long-range ballistic missile the previous day, claiming further advancement in its weapons program pursuing a violation of United Nations resolutions. In response, here's Stephen Miller, an advisor to President Trump.
The message is that we are going to reinforce and strengthen our vital alliances in the Pacific region as part of our strategy to deter and prevent the increasing hostility that we've seen from the North Korean regime.
New York Senator Chuck Schumer is the U.S. Senate Minority Leader.
The real answer to curtailing North Korea is China. Like on so many other areas, China has been woefully inadequate, and they could squeeze North Korea economically. 90% of the imports and exports go through China. And I think we have to tell the Chinese that they have to put the wood to North Korea in a much more serious way than they've done so far.
And for some analysis of the North Korean missile launch, VOA's Victor Beatty speaks with Stephen Norper, Korea expert and professor at Columbia University.
It's interesting in that it is an intermediate range missile test. It is not an intercontinental ballistic missile test, which was what was intimated during Kim Jong-un, the North Korean leader's New Year's address. So I think we should basically look at this with a certain amount of caution, reservation, but not overemphasize it and not ratchet tensions too much. It seems that the North Koreans in their own way are showing a little bit of restraint in that there was action anticipated, but clearly, it's not the action that would have caused more concern. And the range was only 500 kilometers, meaning about 340 miles. It landed off the east coast of North Korea, fired from its west coast. So basically, that's basically what I think we should, if not be comfortable with, at least be able to take it with a bit of nuance.
A White House senior policy advisor, Stephen Miller, on U.S. television Sunday, said in response to what message might be sent to North Korea, said that we're going to reinforce and strengthen our vital alliances in the Pacific region as part of our strategy to deter and prevent the increasing hostility that we've seen in recent years from the North Korean regime. Anything different from the previous Obama administration in that?
Not specifically, because alliance management has been a major focus. It has been by administration since the end of the Second World War. As you mentioned, it certainly was during the most recent administration as a continuity of policy. The thing that is more important for people, especially in Asia, listening to this, is that there were concerns stoked by candidate Trump during the campaign that perhaps alliances would be called to question. His suggestion that alliance partners were not paying their due and perhaps might be cut off raised a lot of concerns. So what this says to those in Asia is, no, don't worry. Our alliance structure is soundly in place. And in particular, by way of Japan and South Korea, those are our linchpins, and those are the ways that the United States will continue to show its readiness to act in the Pacific.
The United States, Japan, and South Korea have asked for an emergency session of the UN Security Council in light of the missile test. We asked Korea Economic Institute scholar Troy Stangerone if anything new might come out of a special meeting at the UN.
I would expect there to be a statement from the council condemning the test, but I think it's unlikely that we see additional sanctions. Sanctions on North Korean missile tests tend to be related to things like their space launch, which are much more robust rockets than this.
What do we know about this latest missile launch? Anything unique, different from previous launches?
The one thing that we know is that it was a medium-range missile. They had not been very successful in testing this type of missile, so it seems as though this test allowed them to make progress in terms of developing a viable medium-range Musudan missile.
Was this missile launched just because they were ready, or was it time to coincide with the U.S.-Japan summit in the U.S.?
I actually think broader foreign policy issues have played into this. If you look at Trump, he was not a conventional candidate, and there were a lot of questions in terms of how he would respond internationally. He had challenged China early on. He had gone after changes in U.S. trade policy. He pushed the issue that he was going to take and reevaluate all of our alliances. And so there was a lot of reasons for North Korea to wait. And when you look at what's happened recently, you have a situation to where he's back down on China. Essentially, Iran tested him, and he put sanctions on that were equivalent to essentially what the Obama administration had done. So I think from the North Korean perspective, they realized that he might not be quite as tough as he had said he would be.
There is a piece in Reuters that says the Trump administration has few good options to counter a defiant North Korea. It said one possibility would be direct military action or direct negotiations. Both those appear to be unlikely, although you may have a different view. And one might be also able to offer, like it did South Korea, Japan, and a missile defense system.
Well, in terms of direct military action, I think in the absence of actionable intelligence that North Korea is about to utilize a nuclear weapon, that's probably highly unlikely for multiple reasons. One, that even if the North Korea only responds to a small scale, you still run the risk of lives in either Japan or South Korea. And if they respond in an escalating fashion, you run the risk of restarting a war, which is something no one is looking to do. So I think direct military options are off the table for the moment. In terms of negotiations, it's difficult to see where that would go right now. The North Koreans have indicated zero willingness that they're interested in negotiating on their weapons programs, which would be the primary goal of the United States, South Korea, and Japan. So that's not likely a viable option at the moment either. In terms of what other options you have, there are not many good ones. You can try to take and convince the Chinese to go along with additional sanctions. We might see some leverage in that area. The challenge becomes it depends on what the relationship between the administration and Beijing is right now. In terms of other things you could do, missile defense is something that I think we should definitely look at. It's the one area where we can take and put pressure on the North and at the same time pressure Beijing without taking and escalating the situation, I think.
Troy Stangerone of the Korea Economic Institute and before him Stephen Norper of Columbia University, both were speaking with VOA's Victor Beatty. This is VOA.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock, on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA. A leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio. Hello, I am Shaka Sali, the host of Straight Talk Africa from The Voice of America. Each Wednesday night, I'll put you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they, you and I, talk about the most important social and political issues in Africa. Shaka Sali saying, I'll be waiting for your call Wednesday night on Straight Talk Africa from The Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Key aide to President Trump says the White House is considering all options in an effort to blunt a court ruling freezing Mr. Trump's order to ban travel from 7 majority Muslim countries and block refugees from entering the United States. Senior policy advisor Stephen Miller said the 3-week-old Trump administration is, in his words, pursuing every single possible action to keep our country safe from terrorism. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman speaks with my colleague Jim Stevenson about a simple avenue the administration might take to get around the court ruling.
First, there was a
lower court federal judge in Seattle, a single guy who, by the way, was a George W. Bush appointee who put the brakes nationwide on President Trump's travel ban. That went to the appellate level in San Francisco, and a three-judge panel basically sided with the lower court judge and said that this travel ban should be on hold and it should remain on hold. So here's the question for the Trump administration. Do you continue to fight it? Do you ask for more than the three-judge panel at the appellate level, the full appellate court? Do you go to trial at the lower court level? Do you appeal it to the Supreme Court? There is that decision, but what we're hearing are hints from the White House that what they may try to do is to rewrite this executive order, to retain as many elements of the existing order as possible, but to do so in such a way that it can withstand legal challenges. President Trump himself said that a new order could be issued any moment now, so we shall see.
Well, the White House does have the advantage of seeing what the shortcomings were of the initial executive order, and presumably their team of lawyers can craft wording such that it would, as you mentioned, withstand that pressure when it is challenged. And this would essentially render the current argument null.
Moot. Yeah. It would render it absolutely moot if a new order were issued. Here's something that I think we can say after a few weeks of the Trump administration. Donald Trump says what he means and tries doggedly to implement exactly what he has promised. It doesn't always rub people the right way. It's not always considered politically correct. But what you saw during the campaign is very much what you are getting as a president. There may be second attempts. There may be a certain need to refine things. But I do not expect Donald Trump to give up on this initiative or any of his central campaign pledges at any point. We are seeing that they are going forward with efforts to crack down on illegal immigration, more raids by Customs and the Border Patrol. We are seeing efforts, actual discussions in terms of beefing up border security. I don't know. No one knows if a wall is going to be constructed. But these are things that he spent a great deal of time talking about during the campaign. And he is going forward on each and every one of these big ticket items. It just does not seem that he will take no for an answer on any of them. The judiciary can stop him in his tracks, but he always has the option, if one avenue is blocked, to try to get to the same result by another avenue. And when you're president, the avenues for trying different things are almost limitless.
VOA's Michael Bowman, he brings us all of the changes as they come along, and for that we're thankful.
Always a pleasure, Jim.
That was VOA's Michael Bowman with my colleague Jim Stevenson. President Trump is praising actions by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers targeting immigrants who are in the country, the U.S., illegally and have criminal records. Mr. Trump tweeted, "Gang members, drug dealers, and others are being removed." Advocacy groups contend the government has rounded up large numbers of people as part of a stepped-up enforcement, while the agency says the effort is no different from enforcement actions carried out in the past. President Obama deported a record number of people, so much so that he was called the deporter-in-chief. International Edition's Lori London asked Mason University, George Mason University professor, author also of The New Minority, Justin Guest, how the events currently taking place are any different from what the previous administration was doing.
The difference is the context. Donald Trump has run a campaign during the election that focused on immigrants as a source of insecurity in the United States and on a threat that needs to be managed by the federal government. And so in many ways, this is perhaps step one, or given the refugee ban, step two of a broader agenda in immigration enforcement for his administration, Lori. The other thing, though, here, there's a pretext, though, beyond just his campaign speeches and the fiery jingoistic rhetoric, and that is the question marks remaining over the DACA program. As you recall, the DACA program gave two-year stays to undocumented immigrants to remain in the United States, to work legally, to get access to schooling, and basically not have to worry about deportation for that period of time, and it was renewable. Because Donald Trump has vowed to end that program, it's very unclear how the records and all the information of those people are going to be used by the federal government. And so there's a lot of anxiety in the immigration community about what Trump will do with these very, very vulnerable people.
So, Justin, is this different from President Obama's policies?
The policies themselves, it's unclear whether it's different for now. So the Trump administration and the Department of Homeland Security have said rhetorically that these raids are standard, they're routine, and that they are targeting criminals in particular. However, a number of non-criminals have also been netted in these raids, and there have been reports of random ID checks taking place in parts of Texas and North Carolina. That would be very different from the Obama administration. The Obama administration had orders to Immigration and Customs Enforcement officials to exclusively focus on criminal elements in the United States, and therefore leaving anyone who is a law-abiding citizen, who's contributing to federal tax dollars, state tax dollars, to their societies, to leave those people alone. And so if those reports are true, then this would be the beginning of a new stage. Also, it could be new if they are broadening their use of the data from DACA in order to target these people, which I think would probably lead to several court cases if that were to be the case, because it would represent quite an injustice and a bait and switch by the federal government. There are no reports that DACA information is being used, but it's the pretext that it could be used in the future that really worries people.
That is George Mason University Professor Justin Guest speaking with my colleague Lori London. On January 31st, President Trump nominated Judge Neil Gorsuch to the High Court, the U.S. High Court, often called the Supreme Court, elevating a conservative somewhat similar to Justice Antonin Scalia, who died last year. Gorsuch has been described as a mild-mannered judge who sits on the Denver-based appellate court. He spoke a bit about his judicial philosophy after being nominated by Mr. Trump.
Practicing in the trial work trenches of the law, I saw, too, that when we judges don our robes, it doesn't make us any smarter, but it does serve as a reminder of what's expected of us. Impartiality and independence, collegiality and courage. As this process now moves to the Senate, I look forward to speaking with members from both sides of the aisle, to answering their questions and to hearing their concerns. I consider the United States Senate the greatest deliberative body in the world, and I respect the important role the Constitution affords it in the confirmation of our judges.
Just recently, Judge Gorsuch took issue with the way President Trump had referred to members of the judiciary, specifically the U.S. court judge who put a temporary halt to Mr. Trump's travel ban. For some analysis of the choice of Gorsuch for the Supreme Court, VOA's Carol Castiel speaks with two judicial scholars. Elizabeth Slattery is a legal fellow at the Center for Legal and Judicial Studies at the Conservative Heritage Foundation, and Jeffrey Rosen is president and CEO of the nonpartisan National Constitution Center in Philadelphia. First up, Slattery reacts to the choice of Gorsuch.
I think President Trump hit it out of the park. Judge Gorsuch is a fantastic choice. He has sterling academic credentials. He worked for the Department of Justice. He was number three at the Department of Justice. He's served for nearly a decade on the Denver-based 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. He's highly regarded by his judicial colleagues, and I couldn't be more pleased with the choice.
Jeffrey Rosen, hit it out of the park. How do you see this choice of Neil Gorsuch to fill the vacancy?
Yes, I think that's a very good phrase. I agree that Judge Gorsuch was a superb choice. He is one of the most respected conservative legal intellectuals on the bench. He has the ability to transform the legal debate by pursuing a clear vision of textualism and originalism. Those are methods of constitutional interpretation. But in some ways, he could differ in interesting ways from Justice Antonin Scalia. Justice Scalia was more of a Hamiltonian. He was very deferential to federal power, whereas Judge Gorsuch is more of a Jeffersonian. He's more skeptical of administrative agencies and broad federal regulations and more protective of individual liberty and states' rights. So I think a big question for the hearings, of course, will be, will Judge Gorsuch be willing to check President Trump if the president exceeds his constitutional bounds? And on that score, I'm confident that he will. His comments about the president's attacks on judges being disheartening are just one indication of his devotion to follow the Constitution, even when it diverges from his political views.
Well, back to you, Elizabeth, since you're both pretty much in agreement on Judge Gorsuch's qualifications and the fact that he would be a very good justice. Give us some sense of how you think this nomination goes forward, you know, a sense of the mechanics, because we do have some skeptics, particularly among the Democrats, who are still hurting, or rather sort of smarting, you know, from not having been able to have hearings for Judge Merrick Garland, who was President Obama's nominee. What do you expect the impediments might be going forward?
Sure. So several of the Senate Democrats come out and said that they don't believe that Judge Gorsuch is in the mainstream. You know, but when we have people like a high-ranking official from the Obama administration, such as Neil Katyal, who you mentioned, praising his qualifications, I think the argument is really going to come down to the process and politics in the Senate rather than a fight over Gorsuch, the nominee, and his jurisprudence. You know, in many ways, he does line up with Justice Scalia and his jurisprudence, such as areas including criminal law and religious liberty and many other areas. But there is a stark sort of difference from Justice Scalia in his willingness to be skeptical of administrative agencies and maybe look at a 1980-era Supreme Court decision called Chevron and potentially overturn that.
Turning back to you, Jeffrey Rosen, what do you see as the way forward now in terms of the process and politics in the Senate, given what happened with President Obama's nominee, Judge Garland, and the fact that many Senate Democrats simply are still very upset about the process?
Well, I certainly sympathize with their distress and understand their feeling that it was unfair that Judge Garland didn't get a hearing, since previously no nominee since Louis Brandeis had waited so long for a hearing. Nevertheless, all that said, the Democrats are in a bit of a political bind. They don't have a lot of good choices. They could choose to exercise the filibuster this time around, but Republicans have made clear that they would blow up the filibuster in response. They could hold the filibuster in their back pocket and hope to exercise it if President Trump gets another nominee, but it might be blown up the second time. So the bottom line is that Judge Gorsuch is likely to be confirmed, and therefore I think the Democrats really could most constructively use the hearing as a substantive inquiry into his judicial philosophy, to what degree he is in fact willing to check unconstitutional excesses by the president and Congress, his views of the regulatory state. There's certainly a lot of room for a vigorous constitutional debate about whether the Democrats agree with Judge Gorsuch versus his Jeffersonian originalism, and by really digging into those questions, they could educate the country in a really important constitutional way.
Jeffrey Rosen of the National Constitution Center in Philadelphia, he and Elizabeth Slattery of the Heritage Foundation spoke with Carol Castiel, host of the VOA program, Encounter. It is time now to find out what's trending on social media. G. Abby Lee here with the latest. Hey, G.
Hi, Steve. The Republican National Committee sent out a tweet Sunday in celebration of President Abraham Lincoln's birthday on February the 12th. The GOP account wrote, "His leadership brought us together. His legacy inspires us still. Happy birthday, President Lincoln." A nice tweet, but it's a quote the account used with the tweet that became an issue. Along with the tweet, it attached a photo with a quote that's not by President Lincoln. The quote in question is believed to be from a newspaper ad on aging from the 1940s. Naturally, the internet joined in, attributing other quote-unquote quotes to the former president.
Hey, Gita, tell us what the people had to say.
The most liked reply to the GOP tweet is this one. "He was a skater boy. She said, see ya later, boy. He wasn't good enough for her." Also attributed to Abraham Lincoln, but it's a line from pop song Skater Boy. The second most liked reply is also a line from a popular 90s pop song, this time Mbop.
You know, that's genius. What else is trending out there?
North Korea's rocket launch. Although it happened Saturday, it's still trending because it was the first missile provocation from the North since President Trump took office. The South Korean military announced Pyongyang launched its first missile test since Trump became U.S. president on Saturday. Mr. Trump and Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe made a joint statement in Florida. Korea experts are wondering if the slim window of opportunity to change U.S.-North Korea relations has closed with a missile launch. Mr. Trump shared a clip from the joint announcement on his Twitter. Back to you, Steve.
And many thanks to you, G. International Edition's G. Abby Lee. By the way, you can follow G on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. I'm there as well at VOA Norman. And our program, International Edition, can be found on Twitter at VOA_IE. Grammy-winning jazz singer Al Jarreau, who transcended genres over a 50-year career, has died. It came just days after announcing his retirement from touring because of exhaustion. Jarreau's official Twitter account and website say that he died surrounded by his wife, his son, and a few other family members and friends. He was 76 years old. One of his big hits was "We're in This Love Together."
Song that we love to sing. Every time we hear the music, and we're in this love together, we got the kind that lasts forever. We're in this love together, and like
Al Jarreau is survived by his wife Susan and son Ryan. They say in lieu of flowers or gifts, if you'd like to, there is a donation page it's set up for the Wisconsin Foundation for School Music. Well, the 59th annual Grammy Awards for World of Music were presented late Sunday at the Staples Center in Los Angeles. Among the many winners, the award for the rock song went to David Bowie for his song Black Star. Bowie, you'll remember, died of cancer last year at the age of 69. 21 Pilots got Best Pop Duo or Group Performance, and Chance the Rapper won the Grammy Award for the Best New Artist. Many thanks, everyone, for joining us here on The Voice of America for International Edition. So good to have you with us. Top World News is straight ahead. And for our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Chaz Hall, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. We hope you have a great Monday. Now a bit more of Al Jarreau. And like berries on the vine, gets sweeter on the
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States congratulates the people of Somalia on the successful conclusion of their national electoral process and the election of Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed as the next president of the federal government of Somalia. The United States looks forward to working closely with the new president and government. Acting State Department spokesperson Mark Toner said, "We commend the Somali security forces and the African Union mission in Somalia for their efforts over the past 6 months to allow the electoral process to unfold in a relatively safe and secure environment. This transition represents an important step forward for the country." Mr. Toner said, "We commend the thousands of Somalis from across the country, including youth and women, who were able to vote in greater numbers than in the 2012 elections, but regret the numerous credible reports of irregularities in the electoral process. We encourage Somalia's new administration to take credible steps to stamp out corruption and to establish strong electoral institutions to enable a free and fair one-person, one-vote poll in 2020. The formation of a new government is critical to addressing Somalia's most pressing problems, the most immediate of which is perhaps the possibility of famine due to severe drought, rising prices, continued limited access to food, and dry forecasts. the United States looks forward to working in partnership with the president and the new government to advance reconciliation, drought relief, security, and build the strong institutions to deliver good governance and development for the Somali people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.